From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It has been crystal clear for years now, the stable, one career, one employer for a lifetime days of myth and memory are gone. What's not clear is a workable, sustainable, survivable model to replace the old vision. It's been a kind of Darwinian pinball out there, commitment out the window. My guests today say maybe the good new model is tours of duty in employment. 4 years here, 4 years there, building networks, building expertise, mission-centered. Would that work for you? This hour On Point, the tour of duty workforce. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. Are you ready for this? Is it your life already? Does it work? For whom? Is it inevitable? Is it making the best of our new economy? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, former White House speechwriter John Lovett tells the Pitzer College class of 2013 to fight the culture of BS. But first, joining me now from Stanford, California, Chris Yeh and Ben Kaznoka, co-authors of the article Tour of Duty, the New Employer-Employee Compact in the current issue of the Harvard Business Review. You can find a link to the article at our website, onpointradio.org. Chris and Ben, welcome to you both. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
Great to be here, Tom.
It's great to have you. I know you've got one more author on this as well. Out of LinkedIn, Reed is a co-author on this piece as well. It's great to have you guys here. You say the old contract has fallen apart. I guess we kind of know that. So, what's the problem that you're? Is that the problem you're looking to solve here? What's your goal in laying out a new model? What are you trying to address?
You know, a year and a half ago, Tom, Reed and I wrote a book called The Startup of You, which was a career strategy book that made the case that every individual professional today is going to have to be more entrepreneurial in their career if they want to get ahead. They're going to have to build their network. Yeah. They have to take intelligent risks. They have to be adaptive. And what we started hearing from corporate managers in recent months is, what does this mean to me? What does this mean to me when the very best talent is showing up to work wanting to be entrepreneurial on the job? How am I supposed to recruit those people, retain those people, train those people? And that was the impetus for this article.
You mean because they're not interested in a long-term relationship? They're just there to make a difference and go?
Yeah, the top talent showing up to work saying, I don't want to pledge lifetime loyalty. I want to be able to take risks. I want to have a plan B. I want to be networking. I want to be building my personal brand. And these are the exact kind of people that the company wants because they're entrepreneurial, they're adaptive, but they had a whole new set of expectations. And hence, we think there needs to be a new compact to define that relationship.
A new employer-employee compact. Like what?
Well, what we focus on is the concept of the tour of duty. The old-fashioned concept of lifetime employment was that you would pledge your loyalty to the company and the company would take care of you. And that gave a framework for trust and mutual investment. The company would trust the employee to stay loyal. The employee would trust the company to take care of them. And as a result, they're able to really optimize. If you start thinking about it, trust and mutual investment are kind of the only way you can make progress in this world. Then when the economy changed, when we went through corporate reengineering, the buyout era, et cetera, that went away. The concept of the tour of duty is to say, look, we understand that lifetime employment isn't realistic anymore, but let's figure out a framework in which we can have trust and mutual investment. Maybe we can't have trust and mutual investment across an entire lifetime or a career, but we can have it in a concentrated period in a tour of duty, 2 to 4 years, where both sides can say, this is mutually beneficial. I, as a company, am going to invest in you, my employee. I'm not just going to provide you with a paycheck, mm-hmm. but I'm going to invest in your ability to become more marketable and more valuable and employable. And I, as an employee, am going to invest not just my time showing up to collect a paycheck, but rather my energy, my entrepreneurial spirit in helping move this company forward around a specific goal or mission.
I'm trying to figure out who this works for. Ben, you write that lifelong employment and loyalty are simply not part of today's world. Pretending that they are decreases trust by forcing both sides to lie. What are the lies that are getting told in the absence of a well-understood new model?
Well, I think there's a kind of wink and a nod that happens when an employee shows up to work, where there's this kind of myth that, hey, we'll keep you around forever, or the high talent employee says, hey, I'm going to stick around forever. And then the employer says, and we want you to do a good job, which we're not going to define with very much specifics. And the employee says, yes, I'll do a good job. And so there's a lot of vagueness around in that initial conversation when an employee shows up to work. What we think instead the better model is to be realistic, is to be honest about, hey, let's define a set of activities where you can have a high impact in a 2 to 4 year period, and we're going to support you to do that and be your most entrepreneurial self. And if you do a great job, we'd love for you to sign up for another tour of duty at our company. Or if you choose to move on to another company, we'd love to welcome you to our corporate alumni network, which is another aspect of the new employer-employee compact.
I'm trying to figure out exactly who this is for, what kind of worker this is for, but we'll get to that. But Chris, let me ask you, I mean, you said what has evolved in the absence of a kind of compact or understanding is an every man for himself, or you could put in there every woman for herself, or every corporation for itself ethos that we've got out there today. What does that look like, Chris, and what are its consequences?
Well, what it looks like is what we really see today in the marketplace. Back in the 1990s, there was this concept of free agent nation. Hey, everyone needs to think of themselves as a free agent. They're no longer a member of a team. They're out for themselves. Well, what is the result of everyone looking out for themselves? It's very difficult to tackle bigger goals. It's very difficult to make longer-term investments. It's very difficult to trust and work together. And what we see is when you reduce everything down to dollars and cents, and it's just about optimizing the amount of money you make, then you see employees hopping from job to job, leaving whenever they get a better offer. When you focus instead on a mission, when you focus on mutual benefit, you're able to develop a situation in which the employee and the employer can work together toward a specific goal. As Ben said, usually it's this very vague goal. Hey, we want you to be a great employee. Hey, I want this to be a great place to work for me. But if instead it's focused around, we're going to launch this particular product, or we're going to roll out this particular initiative, it's a lot easier to tell if you're being successful, and it's a lot easier at the end of the tour of duty to say, hey, this is what we both accomplished.
Chris, take us right into that, what that negotiation might feel like. Let's say, you know, you've got your employer, and here I come in, and I've got skills that you want, and we're not pretending that this is forever, lifelong. It's going to be your tour of duty sort of relationship. Articulate what gets said in that meeting. What are the explicit understandings that would be different from the vagueness or from the old presumptions?
So I would say to you, Tom, it's great to have you as part of this team. As you know, we have a specific goal. We're trying to launch product X into the marketplace in the next 2 to 4 years and really try to drive some traction. Mm-hmm. We're hiring you as the product manager. We're really looking for you to set the direction of the product. If you're able to do this, what's going to happen is you'll be known as the guy who launched Product X. You'll have the reputational ability, the capital to then go on and do other things. We hope that that will be within our company, but we understand that it might not be.
And moreover, I think the employer tells Tom, and we understand you're going to want to continue to build your personal brand, independent of your employment at this company. We understand you're going to want to be updating your LinkedIn profile.
And you're okay with that in this scenario. That doesn't look like betrayal.
Exactly. And so many companies get this wrong. I can't tell you how many executives I've talked to who are nervous about their employees updating their LinkedIn profile.
Yeah. Are you trying to get another job? What's going on?
Yeah, you're making yourself more poachable by other companies. Mm-hmm. But in fact, empowering your employees, say, look, it's inevitable. In this day and age, employees have their own social media presence. They are the brands of themselves. And it's good for our company to have you go out and take people out to lunch and absorb intelligence from the marketplace and bring that back into the company.
So, Ben, okay, 2.5 years, 3 years, 4 years go by. I have launched this product, you know, in stellar fashion for you. Are you really going to say, great, so long, that was nice, Tom, sayonara?
Well, if the employee did an excellent job and the tour of duty has come to an end, the first thing the company should do is to try to retain that employee. And if the employee has his or her eyes set on some new opportunity, mm-hmm. then that's the time when you shift into welcoming that employee into a corporate alumni network to maintain a lifelong relationship with that person.
In other words, you might move on as from a consulting company, you might move on, but you'll still be part of our sort of family. We can talk. I don't know. The value of networking with you goes on.
Exactly. And actually, in a very formalized way, this is another key part of the compact. And we can learn a lot from consulting firms like McKinsey and Bain and BCG, who have these very formal alumni networks, just like a university has an alumni network. They have a newsletter and online groups, and they have tens of thousands of former employees.
So in the course of a career, I might become part of half a dozen different networks, alumni groups. I worked
exactly.
here, I worked there. But does that mean, if I keep bouncing around, Chris, does that mean I really wasn't that great anywhere?
Well, it all comes down to a question of transparency and visibility and accountability. The concept behind the tour of duty is that you are actually doing something. It's not like your job is judged at the end by some sort of employee evaluation form. Oh, he was a 5-star employee. Oh, he was a 10-star employee. Yeah. No, it's Tom launched product X. It generated $100 million in revenue in its first 2 years. These kinds of really tangible accomplishments are things that translate not just in your current job, but in any future job that you take.
What portion of the workforce is this for? What if I'm the night janitor at your company? What if I'm in HR? What if I'm in the cafeteria? Does it have any relevance to me in that case, Chris, or not?
It absolutely still has relevance, because the fact is, whether you're a janitor or a person in HR, there's still something you're trying to accomplish. I'm a big fan of the work of Marcus Buckingham, and he talks about how in his studies, you have these people who are great janitors or great hotel maids, and they actually perform enormously better than just your average janitor or hotel maid, stay with the company longer, do all these various things. You can excel whatever your role. In terms of the tour of duty, obviously, we come from Silicon Valley. We're more focused on the traditional Silicon Valley model, but anyone can excel at a job, and anyone can have goals and accomplishments.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about work after, long after now, the era of lifetime, even long-term employment, the tour of duty employment model, and what it might mean. Two of the authors of a big new piece in the Harvard Business Review are with us. Ben Kaznoka joins us from Stanford, California, and Chris Yeh, co-authors with Reid Hoffman of Tour of Duty, the new employer-employee compact. Come in for a particular mission. Commit to each other for a couple of years, 4 years, and then on, very likely. What do you think? Would this work for you? Would it work for our economy generally? Do we need a new structure? Something more than at will, here today, gone tomorrow? Would a tour of duty, maybe 4 years in the mission, be enough to get your commitment? Does it sound appealing or risky or better than what you have now or worse? We've got all kinds of reaction to this. A lot of it kind of concerned stuff coming in online here, Chris. Ben Shagg writes, a professional lifetime of upheaval and uncertainty, perpetual retraining. Great. You know, not so sure that that's what looks good. And here Bob says, not a bad way to make ends meet if you don't mind being considered a tool by your employer, having lousy benefits and continuously looking for work. What do you make of those responses? I'm just taking off the top of the pile here, Chris.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when you look at those responses, what's clear is people are looking back to a lost golden age. They're saying, gosh, I really loved it when I just had to choose one employer, and if I did a good job, I was taken care of for the rest of my life. And you know what? That's pretty appealing. But the fact is, you can't go out and find that anymore. You have to deal with the new reality that exists. And the new reality that exists is we are, in a sense, tools. The question is, are we tools that are going to be used, or are we tools that we're going to control ourselves?
Used or control ourselves, even that's a negotiation, of course. Let's bring our listeners in. Chris, Milton, Massachusetts, you're on the air with Ben and Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Two questions. First, the fact that there is a learning curve, and both the employee and the employer have to deal with the expense of training and learning the ropes in the company. And second,
sure.
I have been a manager for an IT infrastructure team for many, many years, and I just wanted to let you know that it really did hurt me every time I lost a good resource to another company. And I think it's, from my point of view, it has been invaluable to have in my team people that understand the company inside out.
What do you think about the idea then, Chris, from your working life of a tour of duty? Does that sound good to you to have people who would be there 2, 3, 4 years and then gone? Or are you still saying you want a long-term commitment?
Sure.
Let me get our caller, Chris, here first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Chris and Milton, please. Sorry.
Yes. Me personally, I think that I would not do it. I would much rather keep my employees for long-term or if myself, actually, I am between jobs right now as of last month, and I'm hoping to land a job that is long-term, hopefully to retire from.
Yeah, Chris, I appreciate your call. Chris Yeh, there's caller Chris, who's been a manager. You know, he's had to deal with this, and he'd rather have that long-term commitment. Find good people. It's kind of the model you say you don't like. Find good people who have, I guess, commitment and intelligence and, you know, and then evolve with them through the company's challenges. What about that, Chris Yeh?
Well, first of all, I think that, you know, obviously, I feel very badly for Chris having lost his job. And given his ability as a manager, I feel confident he'll be able to find a new one. I do think that, you know, it's important to note that when we talk about tours of duty, we're not saying that at the end of a tour of duty, you have to leave the company, or that's even desirable. Of course,
if it's the new model, though, that's quite a different idea than long-term or lifetime. I mean, it does suggest a unit of time that's shorter.
Absolutely, but it's in recognition of a new reality. The fact is, if I were to promise you lifetime employment today, you wouldn't even believe me.
So there's where the lie comes in. I mean, here's William writes from Missouri. Says, constantly moving to a new place to be employed is expensive, time-consuming, stressful, eats up investment capital. Constantly retraining for new work, busy work, he says, is also wasteful. Ben, what about those concerns?
You know, I think the new reality is that people should always be investing in themselves and always be investing in their careers, not just when it comes time to make a formal transition. One of the interesting things about the publishing space and the career literature that's come out is it's all about making a job change. So when you get laid off or it's time to change jobs, then you begin to update your resume and build your network and do all these things. And that makes the transition very stressful. I think the entrepreneurial approach to thinking about your career is to always be investing, to take people out to lunch, you know, one day a week, every week of the year, to always be updating your profile and be ready to make a switch when that time comes. And I think if you have that mindset, the transitions are less painful.
Let's go to Katie in Los Angeles, California. Katie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm so excited to hear this topic on a national program like yours. I have lived the life of tour of duties and marketing for almost 15 years.
Is it a good life?
And it is a great life. I love it.
Tell us why.
Because you're never bored. The focus is on accomplishments, not on, you know, just showing up for work and the amount of time that you've been with the company. It really is on focused on what you're getting done for the company. And I've also loved the emphasis on continual learning. Throughout my career, I've been very focused on, you know, staying on top of the next best thing. And that has also made it exciting, and it's made me marketable.
Katie, what about the transitions? I mean, I'm reading here, you know, there's 3 unemployed Americans for every job opening. Is it mm-hmm. terrifying every time you have to make one of those transitions, or are you just so good that you're getting snatched up immediately?
Well, yeah, I am really good, but no, it is. You know, everyone's human, and, you know, we recall when we were in school starting a new school year. You know, there's always butterflies. It's always a little nerve-wracking when you first start in a new position, but you work through it. I think it has very important repercussions, you know, for the corporate environment in several ways. And to your point about asking about that transition, companies really need to focus on putting in place transparent and formal processes in their companies. You know, you can't, in this kind of an environment, with people coming in and doing tours of duty for you, companies that have a lot of informal management processes cannot survive because they can't quickly absorb tour of duty people. Processes need to be formalized. They need to be, and they need to be highly transparent.
Yeah, just make it very clear so everybody knows what's going on.
You plug in, exactly. You plug in, and you can get your job done very quickly, so your ramp-up time is short.
Katie, you're in L.A. Let me ask you, is the economy there accepting of this now? Do people look at you as a job hopper, which used to be, you know, not a compliment, or they say, oh, we get it, here's what she's doing?
That's actually one of the reasons I called, because I do think that that's an area where employers really need to transition into the 21st century and no longer focus so much, especially folks in HR, which, you know, they need to no longer focus on the amount of time that you've been in a job and really look at accomplishments and skills that you've acquired in the time that you've been there. And you can, you know, there can be situations where you are at a job for 4 years and you acquire certain skills and you are able to accomplish certain things. But there are also situations in which you may be at a company for a year or a year and a half and you're intensely working on a project and you acquire just as many skills and you have, you know, equally laudable accomplishments.
Katie, it sounds like you're on the new road, and I'm really grateful to you for calling. Good luck with that. I mean, Ben, what are you finding in terms of the economy of employers adopting this perspective? You guys are out of Silicon Valley. Maybe it's the norm there, but are there other places where people say, wait a minute, why have you been jumping around so much?
Yeah, well, to echo Katie's point, the caller's point about formalized management practices, out where you are, Tom, in Boston, there's a company called HubSpot, which has a very cool policy, which is that if an employee wants to take an interesting person out to lunch, even if it doesn't have a ton to do with their current job, but they think it will be stimulating and growth-oriented, just expense it, no questions asked. If you want to buy
kidding?
A book...
To, whoever it is, whatever the networking may be?
Indeed. If it's general networking, expense it. If you want to buy a book, if there's a book on Amazon that you find that you think would enliven the mind, buy it. Or I think they have an internal wiki. You list it, and it shows up on your Kindle the next day. And so they have formalized processes that actually give some teeth to this idea of lifelong learning and let the employees invest in themselves while on the job.
Well, I wonder just how wide that attitude is. Todd in Omaha, Nebraska. Todd, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks.
Hi.
Back to your point, I think a crucial question here and one that hasn't been raised is who benefits from this arrangement? I think at the root of it is corporate greed, and at least your guest, I admire his honesty by saying, well, workers are just tools in a way, and they're used to produce. And I don't know which is more disturbing, that he's that honest or that that is a reality. But I think the sense of worker as a commodity is quite disturbing in our economic system, and the loyalty and trust is fundamentally violated in that relationship between employer and employee. And I find it disturbing, and then also the greed factor at the root of that, I think, is really motivating it. And it's a sign of the economic times that's very problematic, I find.
Chris Yeh, speak to Todd's concern out of Omaha. What do you say? Loyalty and trust, really no role for them? How do you keep that from becoming just greed-focused?
Absolutely, Tom. When we think about loyalty and trust, we think about loyalty and trust in the context of the tour of duty. We believe that by limiting the scope to just that specific bounded time period, we make it more possible to have loyalty and trust. I think it's great that there are probably family-owned firms out there in this country that continue to have that family arrangement where there is a real personal relationship between employers and employees. And when that happens, you can do wonderful things. Warren Buffett, out in Omaha with Berkshire Hathaway, has made a habit of buying such companies, and by insulating them from the market, they're able to continue to operate in that way and drive great returns. The reality, though, is that many companies are subject to economic forces, and it's not that the company says, I have to exploit my workers in order to rake in money for my owners. It's more along the lines of, I must get an economic return out of all the resources that I have in order for this company to survive. We are all fighting and dealing with a globalized workspace, a workforce and economy where we're not just competing with the guy down the road, we're competing with the gal in India, the guy in China, the gal in Brazil, and so on and so forth.
Everybody trying to process new realities here. Todd in Omaha, I appreciate your call. Ben Kaznuka, Chris Yeh, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation right now from Charlottesville, Virginia, Robert Bruner. He is dean of the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business Administration. Robert Bruner, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
You caught our eye because we were sitting here reading Ben and Chris's piece, Tour of Duty, in the Harvard Business Review. And then here's your commencement address in which you say, don't job hop, it's a mistake. So do tours of duty sound like job hopping to you? What's the advice you're looking to give when you tell new graduates, you know, dig in for the longer haul?
there's a lot of urban legend to suggest that recent MBA graduates change pretty quickly after their first hire. In fact, they may change pretty relentlessly for the first several years coming out of business school. And my advice to them was to stick it out, stay on, and make a difference. And the reason for that is that you really don't know much more after 18 months or even 2 years on the job than you did upon graduation.
So
you're building your own human capital by sticking around and making a difference with the companies for which you work.
But here, Chris and Ben and Reid Hoffman at LinkedIn are looking out at the economy and saying, you know what, it's just people are not going to make long-term commitments. So go in eyes wide open on both sides, employer and employee. Be mission-oriented, not just belonging-oriented. And in 2 to 4 years, you will have either done it or not, and tour of duty finished. On to the next. What do you say to that, Robert?
I have no problem with that. I think it's more a question of, are you sufficiently mission-oriented to have picked a good job in the first place or a good employer? And are you sufficiently mission-oriented to stick with a job through an economic cycle or through a major project to the point at which you've really made a difference for that company? And more importantly, to the extent to which you've made a difference for your own career.
But you said in your speech that in most industries, 4 years is, quoting you here, barely enough time to learn the nuances of a complicated position such as leader or general manager. I assume that's what your graduates are aiming for. So what if a tour of duty is less than that, are they going to get the experience, the insight they need to really move up and ahead?
Well, that's my view. I don't think they will, and I think they need to stick around longer. Now, an economic cycle is somewhere between 3 to 7 years. A major project building, coming out with a major new product or service, building some new infrastructure, all of that can take years from inception through to completion. And it's really sticking with those projects through a cycle like that that you grow immeasurably as a leader.
Ben Kaznuka, are you recommending this for everybody, or do you imagine that there'll be some cadre of employees at a given company that will be long-term? And this is more like the, you know, the come-and-go perimeter that does tours of duty.
Well, I think it really varies, and I would support the dean's comment on accomplishments. I think that was the key word. You want to show up to a job and produce real accomplishments. You want to develop real valuable skills, and that may take 12 months, that may take 18 months, that may take 6 years. And even here in Silicon Valley, there are superstar employees that have been at companies like Google and LinkedIn and Yahoo for 6 to 7 to 8 years. Now, I think those are more the exceptions than the norm, but that is possible. If you can construct a tour of duty that involves you producing real accomplishments, it may take many more than 4 years.
So, Chris Yeh, is this a kind of second-class status, the tour of duty people?
Not at all. It's a question of the difference in role. The concept of the tour of duty is focused on the entrepreneurial employee, the person who really wants to be a change agent and make a big impact. And we state in our article, you may not want, in fact, you almost certainly don't want 100% of your employees to be entrepreneurial. There are roles for which that is not necessarily as appropriate. But for those people that are going to go out there and launch the new products, break open the new markets, make the change, this is the kind of model that makes sense.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about work after the era of lifetime long-term employment, the tour of duty employment model. Harvard Business Review, big pieces, tour of duty, the new employer-employee compact. Chris Yeh and Ben Kaznuka are with us. They're two of the authors of that piece. Robert Bruner's here as well, dean of the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business Administration. Chris, Ben, Robert, let me bring in Merrick calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Merrick, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. So I'm a social entrepreneur, and the key that you guys are missing is the spirit and the teamwork. So from all levels, if you take, let's say, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, you know, the Beatles couldn't last long term. You know, two heads are better than one. So the Rolling Stones, they've lasted a long time. They keep coming back together because they're making good work. They're making good magic. And the Beatles, you know, they just couldn't work together. So they couldn't make it. But the spirit and the music is what keeps bringing, even short-term for the Beatles, obviously they did good work. But long-term with the Rolling Stones, that's why they keep coming back to each other, is because the work that they did was so great. And even at the lowest level, so if Keith Richards breaks a guitar string, on stage, he's making $1 million, and the roadie, he comes running out with a new guitar. He's not making hardly any money, but he's part of the process. He's what makes Keith Richards look so good. So the roadie has excitement of being part of the magic, and that makes it all work.
Yeah,
so,
Merrick, let us pick it up right there. I think we got the idea that the magic of spirit that's bigger than just a mission-oriented. Chris Yeh, what about that? Can you make that magic happen if everybody's in for a tour of duty?
Absolutely. We live in a world where change comes faster than ever before. Think about it. In 2007, the iPhone was introduced. That was just 6 years ago, and it has completely changed the world. This is especially true in technology. The famous story is that Steve Jobs went to John Sculley to recruit him to become head of Apple back in the 1980s, and he asked Sculley, do you want to change the world, or do you want to spend the rest of your life selling sugar water?
But Steve Jobs was not a short-timer at Apple. He came and went and came again, but it wasn't a tour of duty. It was a lifetime passion for him.
It was a lifetime passion for him, but for many of the folks at Apple, it was a tour of duty. In the case of Apple, you have a wonderful company with a culture that has persisted over time where many people became lifers. But those lifers didn't stay in a single role during their entire career at Apple. They changed roles, moved from place to place, took on new responsibilities and new projects. The tour of duty doesn't say you have to leave after 4 years. It just says, let's be very explicit about what kind of missions we're going to pursue. What kind of team are you a member of?
Let's go to Joe in Beverly, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Joe Alsop. And I'd like to congratulate Reed and Ben and Chris on writing this article. I was founder and CEO of Progress Software, and I wrestled with this issue endlessly. And we developed a number of rules of how to think about the problem. And I wish I'd thought of the phrase tour of duty, because basically we came up with the idea that key leaders in the company would go around and talk to their key people and basically say, are you signed up for this project? You know, am I going to be able to move ahead with confidence that for the next, say, year or 2 years, I'm not going to suddenly have to deal with a loss of that key person? But in the long run, our view was that each employee had to manage their own careers, their own, you know, they should do what was in their long-term self-interest. So another phrase we had was short-term, be loyal to the company, long-term, do what's best for you.
So in a way for you, Joe, this would give you, as an employer, this looks like dependability as opposed to people just pinging off to other jobs all the time.
Short-term dependability and long-term, we had to prove that for the next project, we were the best place to be for that particular employee, or we lost them.
And that's just the way it goes.
And that's the way it goes. I utterly agree with the viewpoint expressed by Reed and Ben Chris that you have to manage your own career. I apologize. I just called in because of the topic and haven't read the article, but now I will. And I think that basically everyone has to manage their career long-term, where they do owe loyalty to the company and the company to them is for some period, whereas a particular set of expertise and knowledge that they have is pretty crucial and where a sudden change would be disruptive.
So make it explicit, Joe says, and he's just come through that fire, and maybe it works for everybody. It's really interesting just how far this goes into the workforce effectively. Joe, I appreciate your call. Katrina in Somerville, Massachusetts. You're on, Katrina.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm calling. I'm a recent master's graduate, and I'm trying to get a job in sustainability. And what your guests are speaking to is exactly what I'm finding, and exactly I am looking for a tour of duty. And what I think is so valuable about this concept is this is how the market looks for me, and this makes a really explicit understanding between both the employer and the employee, so you can figure out how to add the most value to everyone, both in the short and the long term.
So you're not looking for an employer for life, Katrina. That's not even on your screen?
It's not. I mean, ideally, if you find a position and it turns into that, that would be wonderful. But a lot of what I'm looking at, positions change quickly. The field changes really quickly. And really, it's about finding that next project where you can make impact both for your own career, but also for the organization you're working for and with.
So you're in the market now. Do you find employers sort of getting this? Are they looking at it this way or not, in your experience, Katrina?
I would say it's mixed. I think it's evolving. I'm networking very intensively as part of this process, and I'm finding a lot of people are advising me to look at it in exactly this way. The term tour of duty is new to me, and it's a very powerful term. But I do find that there's a shift, and the challenge is that I think if more employers were looking at this more explicitly, then it could work better for all parties.
Katrina, I appreciate your call, and let me get one more. Margarita in Providence, Rhode Island. Margarita, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm going to turn off my speakerphone.
Yeah. Oh, boy, great. We walk across the kitchen. We walk back to the table. Are you there? Oh, Margarita, we're looking for more efficiency than that. Sorry, I'm going to have to let you go, Margarita. Call again on the headset. You know, a lot of people are asking, and Robert Roon, I want to bring this to you. Think, what do you do about healthcare in a situation like this, about retirement, pensions, about portability, about disability for that matter? People wondering, well, how do I do this when, you know, in our system, the downtime between jobs, you can be pretty exposed, and we don't have a lot of portability of some of these fundamental things, so you can't carry them around with you. What does that do to the workability of this model, Robert Brunner?
Well, I think the high mobility model is a high risk model for the employee. It's a lot like the corporate equivalent of speed dating, in which you sample here, sample there. Hopefully, you find the love of your life and stay with him or her or the corporation for much longer thereafter. But it's a high risk, high exposure life, and you bear the costs if you get sick or if you're disabled.
Ben, is our society set up for this model, since we don't have a lot of easy portability of some of those sort of supports of life?
Well, I would emphasize what Robert just said about high risk. I do think there's risk involved in a tour of duty model on the part of the employee, but as we write, only with risk do you find killer opportunity, and that's what great people like Katrina, the earlier caller, I think are looking for, are amazing opportunities, and I think she indicated she's willing to take on some risk to pursue that. I think on the larger idea of kind of the societal infrastructure we have set up, I think there's some work to do on this front, right? I don't think we've fully thought through the implications of this new mode of work when it comes to things like healthcare and retirement, and I think that's a good point of discussion going forward.
Ben, killer opportunity, that flies around pretty easily in Silicon Valley, but in a lot of the country, people are looking for a job to support their family, to raise kids. Maybe or maybe not a killer opportunity. I mean, you must have seen front page of the Wall Street Journal today. Risk-averse culture infects U.S. workers, entrepreneurs, corporations. The experience of recent years has reporting in detail here that people don't want to move. In fact, they're not moving. They're trying to hang on to their jobs. And employers, too, are very slow to hire. How do you have tours of duty back-to-back if people don't want to move? And they're slow to hire.
Tom, it's funny. Chris and I were emailing about that article last night prior to coming on the show, thinking that you would raise that, and I'm glad you did. I think there are some flaws in that article in terms of the data they cite. I'm not too sure on what basis they're drawing a lot of their conclusions. But look, I would emphasize what Chris said earlier in the conversation, which is that not every employee at every company is going to be the entrepreneurial type like Katrina who's looking for killer opportunities. I grant that. Not everyone is of the same mold. There are going to be people that are looking for a longer-term job that's not as growth-oriented. That's fine. So this is not a one-size-fit-all model. We're simply making the point that if you're a manager at a company and you want to recruit the very best people to your organization, this is the mindset you need to have. And similarly, if you're a high-performing, ambitious employee, this is the attitude you want to have.
So this one of our listeners writes, says this sounds like a two-class system in the workplace, where you've got some on this kind of track, bouncing around, doing well, maybe killer op with it. And others, our listener says, you know, mostly contractors hired on a contingent basis, more vulnerable in this world. Chris, what do you say to that?
Well, I think that there is a lot of truth to the statement that there are these different classes of employees. And I think that this has always been the case. Corporations have always identified high performers and groomed them for success. And I think it's even more prevalent in, say, Europe, where because of the lack of structural reforms, you have jobs which are protected, and then you have these vast numbers of unprotected temporary jobs. It's not a great situation. What we're trying to do with the tours of duty is not to say we're going to fix all of society's ills. What we're trying to say is we're going to be descriptive and prescriptive. We're going to be descriptive of the world that we live in today, which is a world of change, a world of disruption, and prescriptive about how can you best deal with that. In fact, our model works best for the high performers, but I think that as society continues to evolve, we're going to have to find ways to make things work in a disrupted environment.
Tours of duty for high performers and who knows who else, who knows what falls out of that model if it becomes more widely accepted. But there's no question that there's just a wide open ambiguity of recent years has had its downside for a lot of people as well. This may be a model going forward, and we're grateful to the two of you, with Reid Hoffman, for writing about it. Chris Yeh and Ben Kaznuka joining us from Stanford, California. Their piece is Tour of Duty in the Harvard Business Review. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
And Robert Bruner, University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, Dean there. Robert, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure to be with you all.
In a moment, former White House speechwriter John Lovett tells new Pitzer College grads to fight the culture of BS. This is On Point. Last month, former Obama speechwriter turned sitcom writer John Lovett spoke to Pitzer College's graduating class in Claremont, California. Lovett just turned 30. He told Pitzer grads not to be shy just because they were about to become the youngest, least experienced voice in the room.
You have to be confident in your potential and aware of your inexperience, and that's really tough. There are moments when you have to have you'll have a different point of view because you're a fresh set of eyes. Because you don't care how it's been done before, because you're sharp and creative, because there is another way, a better way. But there will also be moments when you have a different point of view because you're wrong. Because you're 23 and you should shut up and listen to somebody who's been around the block. Now the old people are applauding. It's hard to tell the difference. You know, I love to get this one wrong. I got it wrong a ton when I started out as a speechwriter for Hillary Clinton. I got it wrong again when I became a presidential speechwriter. I worked on one speech about the financial system that caused the Dow to drop like 200 points. You know, so that speech could have been better, probably. Just this past year, I faced the same dilemma co-creating a show on NBC. It's called 1600 Penn, and while you may have heard of it, based on the ratings, you almost certainly didn't see it. Though, it recently did make some headlines when it was canceled. I had never so much as written a line of dialogue before I wrote this show, but I'm working with directors and writers and executives with years and years of experience in the biz. We call it the biz. I will always cringe remembering those little embarrassing moments when I said something dumb on a conference call, when my inexperience poked through, when I should have been more solicitous of the judgment of those around me. There's a reminder that it's not mutually exclusive to be confident and humble, to be skeptical and eager to learn. But there's another side to this coin, which brings me to lesson number two. Sometimes you're going to be inexperienced, naive, untested, and totally right. And then in those moments, you have to make a choice. Is this a time to speak up or hold back? And it won't be easy. You know, I worked for then-Senator Clinton during her campaign for president, and I believed in her and still do. But I vividly remember feeling like things weren't right in that campaign. A lot of the young staffers felt that way. It wasn't a secret that there were problems in how the campaign was being run. The campaign pollster, for instance, rolled out so many slogans it was impossible to keep track. Here is a sample. Let the conversation begin. Ready for change, ready to lead. Working for change, working for you. Strength plus experience equals change. Now, I like this one because it leads to the lesser-known corollary, strength plus experience divided by change equals one. And then there was my favorite. Big challenges, real solutions, time to pick a president. One slogan, which he had printed on the side of a bus, but it was basically too small to read. So I'm putting these slogans into speeches, and I look over at an Obama campaign rally on cable news, and they have one slogan. It's just the word change in big letters. That seemed better. But I was timid, and a lot of us just assumed or wanted to assume that more experienced people must know what they're doing. But that wasn't true. So the campaign ended, my candidate lost, and I ended up as a presidential speechwriter anyway, which was cool. But the lesson I drew from that campaign, other than the fact that it's always a mistake to run against Barack Obama, is the subway rule. If you see something, say something. And I've tried to honor that ever since, to call BS when I see it, and to not be afraid to get in people's faces and throw a punch or two to make a point, metaphorically, look at me, I wouldn't do well in an altercation. Now, lessons one and two can be intention, and I can't tell you how to strike the balance every time, though it helps to be very charming. And from my point of view, I'd rather be wrong and cringe than right and regret not speaking up. But the good news is, as long as you aren't stubbornly wrong so frequently that they kick you out of the building, or so meek that everyone forgets you're in the building, you'll learn and grow and get better at striking that balance until your inexperience becomes experience. So it's a dilemma that solves itself. How awesome is that?
30-year-old former White House speechwriter John Lovett speaking to Pitzker College's class of 2013 in Claremont, California. For transcript and video of his full address, go to our website at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. Good luck. This is On Point.